Superman and Hawkman. Welcome to FW Team Up, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Siskoid.
And I'm Bass.
Taking you through a classic superhero team-up, Superman and Hawkman, from DC Comics Presents number 11, cover dated July of 1979. And Bass, you're famous for disliking this character.
Yeah.
But you recently got married. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I don't know, maybe that's made you warm up to this character, one of the best-known married superheroes?
Well, my wedding and marriage has not. I always saw Hawkman as something, you know, meme. and that's a technical term, meme. But, you know, the more I read some Hawkman, the more I enjoy some stuff, you know.
Well, in fact, you have to find something to like because our first feature on the show is reasons why we like the guest character. So let's be charitable to Hawkman here. What's so great about, and let's stick to the Cater Hall Hawkman, the Silver Age Hawkman.
Sure. Well, I mean, the reason I liked Hawkman is because he looked cool. You know, he has a cool mask, he has wings, weapons, and not any weapons. You know, he has this big mace. And that's why I liked him as a kid. As I grew up, I was like, man, you know what? He has wings. He could stay at a distance. He should have, you know, a ranged weapon. So I started disliking him because I thought he was kind of like a, you know, just a busted up D&D character. You know, he's not that good and he has to go into melee range. And you know, I get it. People can do whatever they want with their characters and it's fine. It's just that he's not how I would have created that character. He's strong, but not that strong. And he can fly, but not that fast. And, you know, he was just like a strong winged guy.
I'll agree with you to a point that maybe they didn't change him enough from the Golden Age version, right? They put him in space and winged aliens do exist. You know, like it's a Flash Gordon thing.
Yeah.
Despite the origin, so close to the Golden Age character and the look and the using the same weapons that they didn't update enough of him. So I get why you have that impression. But you're right. He does look cool. He was one of my first superpowers action figures for that reason. Also, because of the wings, it just seemed like a better value. There's just more plastic.
Oh, yeah, because we weigh them. You know, this one weighs 4 ounces.
You're kidding, but that was sometimes part of my equation.
Really?
Like, yeah, there's just more toy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I think my first one was like Darkseid because he's huge.
That's very true. And you could see behind his head.
You could shine a light in there to shoot him mega beams.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. But, you know, I think Hawkman just was always a bit off for me. But the more I read about him, the more I like him. I like the space cop better than the, you know, archaeologist that finds a medallion. You know, that's not my thing. But space cop, I can dig it.
Okay. Well, in the past, when I've talked about the character, I've mostly made it about the marriage to Shayira. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the sexy couple. Today, I'm simply going to say I miss the space cop Hawkman, actually. Because these days, it's all about Carter Hall, who through reincarnation and other shenanigans is the proper Hawkman. And while we're told that the Thanagarian Hawkman is around in a contemporary reincarnation, because your soul bounces around in time, so you can have two holders in the same era, we really don't see much of him. But a space cop, I think that's at least as interesting as an archaeologist who's a reincarnation of an Egyptian prince. Certainly comes with more lore to explore. So yeah. I say bring back the space cop. Let's see those characters, him and Hawkwoman. You know, it's all JSA Carter Hall type stuff now. We're lucky because this month, I mean, he's already been a guest star on the show, so we don't have to do a publication history. I will point you to episode 17, Adam Strange and Hawkman, for more information if you want it. This issue is called Murder by Starlight. It's by Kerry Bates, Joe Staton, and Frank Chiaramonte. After he returns from World War II France, Superman is attacked by the secret bomber, Hawkman, Over the next few days, Superman wonders what happened there and where Hawkman has run to. He also goes on a photo shoot with contest winner Mark Teichman, but the photos reveal he's been infected with a strange energy. Turns out Hawkman is under the control of Frank Rales, who is using stellar energies to trick Hawkman and Superman into exploding themselves. Between the photos and a message from a friendly bird, Superman fakes the hero's death. Rales turns off his devices. Oh, he's easily apprehended. The end.
Very easily apprehended.
Before we get into the story, let's look at this cover by Ross Andrew and Jake Giordano. You see Hawkman. There's energy around his punch. He's grabbed Superman. He's about to punch him next to the Eiffel Tower as little meeples stare upwards. The most titanic battle of the year between star-born superheroes. Oh, interesting that they make a link there. Hawkman says, Earth isn't big enough for both of us, Superman, so I'm going to annihilate you. And Superman thinks Hawkman's gone mad. Once he hits me with this Polaris-powered punch, there'll be nothing left of either of us. With the power of alliteration, he might destroy Superman. What's going on here? What do you think of this cover?
It's a beautiful cover. I think it's beautiful. I like the Eiffel Tower and that little fisheye thing that happens when you're up top and you're trying to get a wide angle, and it's very nicely done. The little people also, they're cool. They give us really a sense of height, and that's really, really nice.
Like the ones that are on the ground are less detailed than the ones that are on the tower, and so that's well done.
Oh, yeah, very well done. And Hawkman looks cool. I mean, he's all like this sturdy, strong, you know, almost striking a pose, like a muscle pose, and has this glowing fist. Like, what's going on? Is he Iron Fist all of a sudden? And Superman gets, I guess, hit by some kind of beam coming from, you know, the right?
You're right. The beam is coming from off the page. So is this like the stellar energies? Is this, I don't know. It doesn't really feature in the book.
It might be something like that. You know, maybe the cover was done before or...
Or without knowing the story, yeah.
Exactly. But everybody looks cool. The colors are wonderful. Even the gray from the Hawkman wings even looks good in this. It very well balanced, and it's a well done cover. I like it a lot.
I agree. It's a beauty. It makes me want to play with my superpowers action figures.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I don't have a Superman, sadly.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. It just like seems so basic. Where's all the plastic? It's just like the basic guy.
The cape is too short. What's going on?
The neck is too thick. That was my problem with that figure. But yeah, I mean, the colors are great. The background is more muted, but without doing like a special effect. It's just light greens and grays. And,
yeah.
So I think, yeah, this is a winner. And when I open it up and see the splash page, which is essentially the same idea, but over Metropolis, I should think, and that there's two battles in this, and one is in Paris and one is in Metropolis. So, okay. It's kind of the same idea, but I don't think it works as well. I think that city is super boring compared to the Eiffel Tower and the Champs-Élysées there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it looks very square and very futuristic and very Metropolis-y. So yeah, it's a bit boring, but Hawkman does look cool. Though he, you know, the wings are kind of different. He's like in an attack pose.
I do like the pose.
Yeah, the pose is pretty cool.
He's almost sitting on, like he's, like if this were on the ground, it's in the air, but if it were on the ground, it'd be like, you know, you got your opponent down and you're pushing him in the stomach with your knee is what he's doing while you punch. So this is like very MMA.
Yeah, very much so. He looks very much in control in the air, and I love it. I actually love it. But, I mean, the splash page is kind of, you know, redundant since the cover was...
A lot of these are, right? It's like, I'm wondering why. I mean, I wonder when they'll stop doing splash pages. Because I like a splash page that's, I don't know, more symbolic. You know, it's like an art piece or something that makes you wonder what's going to be inside. But when it's exactly the cover or much the same information as the cover, it's like, well, we already got that. Like the editor should be doing something different with those two, like asking for something different. Or else we've played this game a lot. Like, let's compare the splash page to the cover because it's essentially the same idea. And usually the cover wins.
Yeah, well, it should. We're always going to compare. That's the big problem with having the splash page almost being the same as the cover. We're always going to compare, but if you do something different, we're not comparing. We're actually enhancing everything, right? Because we're not going to be in comparison mode. We're going to be in complementary mode or something like that.
I also think there's a coloring problem on that splash page. Superman's cape is half red, and then it's sort of they confused it with the wings. The other part is gray, and that's not the wing. The wings should come in there, but it's like merged, and they've given it a gray tone, which is not, that's not right.
Yeah, somebody messed up.
It happens, because when the art is confusing, you know, a little bit, or the placement of the word bubbles confuses it, whatever. And here, Adrian Roy, who's a great colorist. I mean, we've sung her praises before on this show with different hosts, and here it's just like a mistake.
Yeah, it happens.
Especially on these deadlines that they probably had back in the day. All right, so the story starts, or actually doesn't start right away, because we get a recap of what happened last time, where Superman was bounced out of, you know, alignment with history. He's in Paris. There was a bomb in a trophy he was being given. He tried to throw it. It had super glue on it. The explosion sent him back in time, right? And now he's come back. And Hawkman is there on the Arc de Triomphe. And Superman remembers, yes, Cader Hall, or Carter Hall, which is a secret identity on Earth. They go back and forth using it. Carter Hall was here in the crowd now that I use my super memory to remember. But of course, you know, we see it inset on the panel. And it's like, this guy could be Bruce Wayne, could be any hero with black hair.
Most of them. You had black-haired heroes and blonde heroes. And that's
sometimes
it.
They're redhead.
Jimmy Olsen and Archie.
Well, the women have more, more red. No, we get red hair. We do get red hair. Elongated man.
Yeah, we're going through the same Rolodex of hair.
Regardless of that. I looked back in the previous issue. We do not see a Carter Hall looking guy in the crowd. We don't see the crowd, so it's not foreshadowed. And it's very weird that not only would he be here, but he would be this mad bomber. It's the first part of our, I think, questioning of the overall scheme in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Why would Hawkman do that? It makes no sense.
Right, but also I'm not sure it makes sense even once we know what's going on. And Hawkman attacks him. So we get our first fight over Paris.
And the attack is awesome. He has the jump on Superman, hits him in the back with his legs while he's grabbing his chin, and he has this wheat sound. You know, it's not wheat. It's not like, he's not talking about like cereal. He's doing the hawk.
You usually go caca when you talk about Hawkman, but it's really, this is the kind of whistle that he does and that we saw in the Superman movie this summer.
Yeah, Hawk Girl.
And I saw a lot of people take exception to it, like thought it was like kind of shocking that she would be screaming like that. It was weird. But look, I mean, this is core Hawkman behavior. It's just we don't hear it on the page, so we don't realize that this whistle, what that would really sound like.
Yeah, and I don't hate it at all. I didn't hate it for Hawk Girl in the movie. I thought Hawk Girl was great. And I don't hate it here. I mean, I think it's kind of a little bit of added flavor for Hawkman.
Page 5, it made me laugh because Superman looks behind the mask with his X-ray vision to confirm it is indeed Carter Hall, right? Not just a guy dressed in a Hawkman costume. And, I mean, they can't really make it work physically because unless maybe the X-ray vision like can look through the back of his own skull, because Hawkman is behind him.
You know what? If that is, that's probably not the case, but I like to think that is the case. Superman can look behind his head.
And the other interesting fact in this page during this fight is that Superman thinks, he's hitting me with all the Thanagarian strength he can muster, more than enough force to knock down the Eiffel Tower. So this made me realize that, I don't know, like Hawkman is a lot stronger than we think.
I think he could
topple the tower with his punches.
I think so. I mean, I always heard that Hawkman was like as strong as like 10 men or 12 men or something like that.
Well, I dare any 12 men to push the Eiffel Tower down.
Oh, yeah, that's never going to happen.
I mean, we're going to find out that Hawkman is being enhanced
Yeah.
By Stellar Energies, the Polaris Punch and all that. But that's not what's, like, the way Superman is thinking it, it seems like all Thanagarians are this strong. But what he may mean is just, like, these punches have the force required, which would be still more than what Hawkman can do usually, you know?
So, yeah, well, that's how I read it.
It's how we have to read it, because I don't think we have any other sources where Hawkman is that level of strength.
Exactly, exactly. And I think he was enhanced, and he's quicker than he was, and he's stronger than he was, and that's how he gets the jump on Superman almost every fight. I mean, every time he comes into a fight, he's the instigator, and he always gets first punch in.
In fact, even when he loses here, Superman finally, you know, knocks him out. Well, doesn't. It's like he punches him, and Hawkman flies way too far, because in reality, he's escaping.
Yeah, he's rolling with that punch and using that velocity and just escapes.
And creates a diversion by calling a flock of falcons to dive bomb the crowd.
Yeah.
And Superman has to, this is kind of fun, blow them away with his super breath.
Well, he doesn't want to hurt them.
No, they're just being controlled. I'm not sure how. Hawkman is always pictured as talking to, like, Aquaman has like a telepathic control
yeah.
over sea creatures. But Hawkman, it always seems like a conversation.
Yeah.
Even in the Golden Age. And
I mean, the birds are smarter than fish.
Yes, but I guess, oh, yeah, probably Aquaman has more of a conversation with dolphins and whales.
Yeah.
Like, they have more agency, whereas, you know, guppies or eels. You know.
Yeah, or jellyfish.
Yeah, jellyfish don't. So he blows the falcons away without harming them. You see the crowd running.
It's like Hitchcock's birds all of a sudden.
The birds. Exactly, the birds, but Superman's in there, so nobody, you know, gets hurt. And then we skip ahead in time. It's maybe like a week later or something. And we're at the Daily Planet offices. And we meet Mark Teichman. Now, who is Mark Teichman? In this issue, he's the first prize winner of the Daily Planet charity lottery drawing. And he's won a half a day with Superman. That's a pretty cool prize.
That is a very cool prize. I do have a question, though, on page 7.
Yeah.
Is the guy holding the camera in the first panel Mark Teichman? Because he looks nothing like the other guy.
No, because he's in Paris. It's a guy in Paris.
Okay.
And we cut. It's an interesting cut because this guy is taking pictures in Paris, and boom, we cut to the Daily Planet, where that picture that he's taken is on the Daily Planet front page.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
we're okay, using the picture to cut across the Atlantic.
That's clever.
But you're right. Mark Teichman is a photographer in this, right?
Yeah.
So there's a connection. He's also, like, in the issue, that's what he is. In the real world, he won the Name the Letter Column contest for DC Comics Presents. So it pair mail, which I'm sorry, Mark. I've never liked. I guess it's air mail, but they're a pair of heroes. Pair mail. I don't know. But he did win the contest. This prize was having a role in an upcoming issue of DC Comics Presents. Now, normally, and they've done this in the past, you get a quick cameo. Somebody draws your likeness in the crowd. Maybe you get a line. I don't know. But this, he gets like a whole story. A sizable story where he, you know, he shows up, he hangs out with Superman, he's going to take pictures, his pictures are going to be a clue to what's happening.
A clue? Oh my, Mark is essential to this story.
Yes, he's crucial. So I don't know if, like, Mark is from, apparently, if we follow the what they say here, you know, I don't know if he shared a bio with them, certainly a picture. Maybe he visited the offices of DC Comics, since he apparently lives in Staten Island.
Yeah.
So he's close by. So did they meet with him? Was he, in a way, chosen because he lived nearby? Was he known to the writers? I'm not saying there was, like, some cheating there, but regardless, he may have visited the offices so they could take a picture.
Maybe he came in. I mean, he learned that he won and he was in the neighborhood.
And it's been a while. Issue 11, and there's been a letter column since at least issue 4, right? Probably called pair mail. I haven't checked. So they had the time to actually meet him. And instead of just drawing him in at the last minute, they wrote a story. Maybe he wasn't really a photographer. So they wrote a story about that and fit him in to this tale. I think that's very cool, and it makes the issue more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Kerry Bates had like this brief. Okay, we got to fit this guy in, and this is his bio, and he needs to be in the issue. And Kerry Bates didn't cheap out, actually made the story about him.
It works well. I think it works well. I mean, we're talking about him right now. I mean, he has key elements to this story. He unveils key elements that basically give Superman an understanding of what's going on. That and one other character.
Yes, we'll see. And it's not Hawkwoman, although she does appear in a flashback. Yeah. During this week, Superman went to, I guess, is it Midway City at this point? And asked her, you know, what the heck's going on? And she's going, well, I haven't seen Hawkman in 52 hours.
Yeah, 52 hours. DC Comics is obsessed with 52. I get it. There are 52 weeks in a year. I get it.
But at this point, were they? I mean, eventually they were very much obsessed with 52. But this is prior to any of that kind of nonsense. It made me wonder. What it really evoked for me was on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because the station is in the Bajor system, they use Bajor's length of day.
Okay.
And it's 26 hours.
Okay.
So I've seen reactors, you know, like people reacting to Deep Space Nine who don't really watch it or didn't catch that element or haven't watched it like 100 times like I have. And they go like, that's a, like Odo says, you've got 52 hours, you've got 26 hours. And they go, well, that's really specific. It's not specific. It's like us saying you have 24 hours. 52 is you have 48 hours. And we use that a lot, right? We say that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And
yeah.
We don't need specifically, I'll be here at 23:59, making sure you get out of town. We just mean 2 days. And I think, and this makes me wonder, is Thanagar like Bajor on a 26 hour day? Has this been ever said before? And that's why they're using that continuity. Somebody needs to, you know, a Hawkman fan out there needs to tell us if I'm right. But because 52 is bizarre, unless it means for her 48 hours.
Yeah, exactly. If that's not the explanation, I'm taking that as the explanation. I'm all for that. It makes sense.
If that's what it is. Of course, this flashback is in the kind of in the middle of the morning that Mark Teichman is spending with Superman. And they're just doing stunts. He's taking pictures of Superman, like, you know, smashing junk cars or lifting elephants, that kind of stuff. So it's just like a fun day where he can take pictures, and Superman takes part in charity. I don't know how much money this made, this contest, but evidently, you know, you have to buy in. And Superman does charity stuff. You know, that's the usual Superman of this era.
Lifting for charity.
Hawkman, however, is flying back to this observatory, and we meet the villain of the piece. Frank Rails. He's got kind of a snazzy, henchman bodysuit kind of look.
It kind of looks like Nick Fury used to wear, like, in the 80s.
And from the information that we get from him across these pages, he has a brother called Harry, who's dead now. He himself, Frank, is an ex-con. He was put in jail by Hawkman, so he has a reason to want revenge. But he's never been seen before. It's not like he's a character, some sort of legacy character. We just learned this. His brother Harry had this observatory and created some magic science that Frank is now going to use for his scheme.
Yeah, and it's overcomplicated.
Well, let's explain it.
Can we? Can we explain it? Well, I can't
explain it reasonably, but I can explain it according to the story.
3 pages of exposition and Frank telling us what's going on that we have no idea. And it gets kind of creepy when you look at it because, you know, he has this brush and he's brushing the wings and he has the polar. Go ahead.
Apparently, his brother created a telescope that can absorb starlight energy, specifically the energy coming from Polaris, the North Star.
Yeah.
Which we learn is also the star Thanagar is orbiting. It's that same star. I was kind of shocked at first. It's like, really? The North Star? But that's information that was revealed actually in the team up with Adam Strange that this show covered years ago. Uh-huh. So obviously I forgot about all this. I was probably shocked that first time too. And so that energy is specific to Thanagarians, the same way that Superman absorbs energy from our sun, which is not his native sun, so I don't know if that's the same. But he can power up Hawkman with this Polaris energy.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really did not enjoy. I mean, that's Superman's shtick, right? That's what how Superman gets his powers. It's through our yellow sun, and that's magic enough, you know, for Superman. But now Hawkman is powered up by the sun of his planet.
His sun. Whereas Superman would be depowered by his own sun, so there's a difference.
Well, there is, but it's still sun power.
And that's if we believe that Polaris has planets, which is not conclusively proven either way. Now that we can see planets, I say see, but we can detect planets these days. I had to check. Are there planets around Polaris? And we don't know either way. None have been detected, but it's not like, no, there aren't any. But it's also, I have to question it, because Polaris is actually a ternary star system.
Yeah, three suns. Or three stars, yeah.
Three stars in a system. That makes me wonder if that creates wild orbits normally.
Yeah.
So would a planet, a life-giving planet, life-sustaining planet, be possible in such a system? Now, maybe, I know those are some of those stars may be far away, and it's like it's orbiting, like one star is orbiting another, and it's not necessarily a problem for Thanagar, but I do have that question, right?
Yeah.
In the flashback, we see two stars, and maybe the word balloon covers another, so it looks like the science is correct, except, of course, a science fiction element, where we have to believe that it can have a planet, and that and that the star's energy can be used to turn Hawkman into a human bomb, basically.
Yeah.
That's less a problem for me than the fact that he also uses that energy to control Hawkman with a helmet that we learn later, it's part of the, if he's not wearing the helmet, Hawkman is not under control. And yet, we often see shots of him without the helmet.
So it works on or off, because he has his helmet in his hand for a long while. Maybe he has to be within the vicinity of the helmet. I don't know how it works.
But the plot is more complicated than that, because, or stupider than that, because even though he can power up Hawkman, then Hawkman is kind of turns into antimatter in a way. You know, it's like eventually he'll have enough that if he punches Superman, they'll both blow up. Now, why send him against Superman? What is his beef with Superman?
Do we know?
No. So
no.
No. And why did you put a bomb in a trophy to all of this stuff in Paris? It makes no sense. It's just like we just need these issues to be back to back.
It's so overly complicated.
I mean, what I would have done if I have a beef against the Hawks, I would have sent Hawkman against Hawkwoman, and then, you know, they blow up. Those are my enemies. Superman is like the toughest possible opponent. It's like your worst choice.
And if you want to hurt the Hawk people, make them fight against each other, right? If Hawkman punches Hawk Girl and she blows up, I mean, he's going to be devastated. And the
Even
reverse is true. If he blows up and she survives, then she's devastated. So the evil guy wins.
Okay, I've thought of a no prize while we were talking. And maybe Superman is just like the hardest. Superman is so strong and invulnerable that creates the friction you need. But then you could just go punching diamonds or something. It's for this story. But let's track back a little, because there's another character. You alluded to him earlier.
Yes.
It's the Blue Jay.
The Blue Jay.
I was thinking, page 11, there's a Blue Jay. He seems startled at Superman and Teichman flying around. And I was thinking, well, Hawkman is evil at this point. So this is one of the servants of Hawkman, and this Blue Jay is going to snitch on Superman or tell Hawkman stuff. So I wasn't trusting the Blue Jay, which of course comes from the fact that I have a lot of friends who tell me that Blue Jays are assholes.
Yeah.
Assholes of the bird world.
Around my house, they hide peanuts. People who are allergic are like nervous because they can find peanuts everywhere. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know they were like enemies to humanity. I just thought that they were jerks to other birds or something.
Oh, they are.
They're the asshole who is very attractive and gets away with a lot of things. That's what they are.
Yeah.
Because when you get a blue jay on your porch or whatever, It's like a magical experience. They're so beautiful. They're so pretty.
They are. And I think that's the only thing that saves them. They're pretty.
In this case, I misconstrued the Blue Jay's intentions because it will turn out that the Blue Jay is an ally to our heroes. So cutting back to Mark Dykeman, who is developing the photos at the Daily Planet, which makes me feel like, you know, maybe this was a Jimmy Olsen story.
It could have been because he's working. They let him use the dark room, you know, and it all makes sense. Nothing makes no sense, but it all makes sense. And it's probably my favorite part of the story where Mark Dykeman is developing the photographs, the pictures he took, and he notices that Superman is charged up with some kind of radiation because he can only see it in the pictures. And that to me was smart. That was fun.
We get a sort of confirmation because while he's showing this to Clark Kent, you, Mr. Kent, you know Superman. Maybe you can warn him about this. Sure, I can. He hears a noise at the window and it's the Blue Jay. And he saves the Blue Jay from falling to its death. It's exhausted from having followed Superman and Mark across town all day. And the bird, Arkwheat, talks to Clark Kent, who has learned the bird language. Because there's only one, apparently. The bird language from Hawkman. Enough to understand what the Blue Jay is trying to tell him, which is a pretty complicated vocabulary.
Yeah, and I mean, that's crazy. Because have you heard? They're not songbirds. The Blue Jays, they don't... That's not how they sound. They're like... They're horrible. They're horrible.
Let me find it online, and I'll drop it in here.
It's horrible.
So they're just, nobody's walking into the room. It's like, what's going on in here? You know, the offices, the sound of a Blue Jay screaming. And Superman's going to know enough to, he's only going to reveal what's happening on the final page. But he does understand the message. Cut to, a bit later, Superman is once again attacked by Hawkman. Same deal, grab him from the back, everything.
Yeah, I think the setup is even cooler because, I mean, it kind of sounds like I like Hawkman at this point. And I must admit, the action scenes are very good. I like them. You see him flying very high. It's very majestic. And he plunges, you know, you can feel it going very fast. And he attacks Superman from the back once again with that loud wheat, the whistle. And he's just controlling Superman in the air. He grabs him from the back, turns him over, and punches him with a huge punch. I mean, Superman had no chance whatsoever.
And they explode, as per the plan. Within the hour, it's on the news that no trace of them have been found. They've been pulverized. Frank Rails goes, ha-ha, you betcha, Lana Lang. She's the news reporter here. And he takes his helmet off, or he switches off his machines. His mind control machines. And Superman and Hawkman just show up. Ha ha, you know. It's not possible. Sure it is. And Hawkman punches him out. It's over, except for the explanations, which Mark Dykeman asks for. What the hell is going on, guys?
He's being us at that moment.
Well, he is us, right? He was a reader.
Yeah.
Before he was a character. And it turns out that Hawkman, before he succumbed to the mind control, which here is like a ray. So maybe it's got like staying power and the helmet is just to give specific commands.
Maybe.
But Hawkman had time, knowing that his mind was going, had time to tell a Blue Jay to find Superman. No, don't go to my wife, who speaks bird, who I'm sure understands bird, and who can then rally other heroes. No, go to Superman and tell him what's going on, that I've been under control. So the bird eventually finds, like, it takes a week. The bird eventually finds Superman, tells him what's going on. And so Superman was ready for it, rolled with the punch, and set off some special effects to create the explosion. No explanation as to what that is, how that was done, where were the fireworks. There's just nothing there. And also, no real explanation as to what happens to Hawkman at this point, because he's under control until Frank Rails punches a button. So there's an hour there where Hawkman isn't, unless he was released from, because the blast or something. No, because it wasn't a real blast. So I don't know if they can actually explain that.
I don't think they will explain it. I think that's a good example of suspension of disbelief.
Okay.
And just going with it. You know, just rolling with that punch like Superman rolled with, an atomic bomb.
I got to tell you, we often use that phrase, suspension of disbelief. But the full expression is willing suspension of disbelief.
Yes.
That's
yes.
The full word, the full expression. So are we willing? That's up to you, reader. And so that's there's a big explanation. So that's a Silver Age ending, even though we're in 1979. It's very Silver Age. And eventually, as we'll talk about in our mini debates, the heroes fly off and bring Mark Tightman back to his home in Staten Island.
And Hawkman smiles in this. That's how we know he's a hero again. He's smiling.
Oh, I see. All right, who fared better? How well does this fit each of the characters' stories or atmospheres? Is this a Superman story, Bess, or is it more of a Hawkman story? Because the villain claims to be a Hawkman villain, even though he's never appeared before. And Hawkman is under his control for most of the issues, so that it's hard to call it a Hawkman story. And I don't know. What do you go for?
Well, the flashback, every flashback in this story was longer than Hawkman not being mind controlled. So, I mean, it can't be Hawkman. And Superman was out on a photo shoot, so it's not really a Superman story either. So, we're not satisfied, and we think it's weirdly convoluted and complicated, so we're not faring good in this. I think the only person who is winning in this comic book is Mark Tightman. It's a Mark Tightman story. That's what it is, and he's the star of the show.
You know, great point. I gotta agree that they built it around Mark Tightman, so it's a Mark Tightman comic, you know? What a great prize.
What a wonderful prize.
They don't do that anymore. Okay, cool moves. What is Superman's coolest move?
Okay. I think, knowing Blue Jays, I think talking with the Blue Jay and getting all the information with that little blue booger going, gah! I think that takes skill. They sound like a high-pitched crow. That's his best move.
My choice isn't an action move either. I guess spending the day with a fan. I think that's quite cool of him. It's very Superman of him.
Very
take
much
part
so,
in a charity and you just treat a civilian as a friend.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
It was cool for Mark. What about Hawkman's coolest move?
Hawkman... I mean, every time he attacked from the sky, he was in control. He had cool moves. You know, every limb was in that fight. He wasn't just punching. He was kneeing and grabbing. And so I really liked Hawkman's aerial martial arts. He was great at it.
One epithet that is used for Hawkman is savage, is the savage Hawkman. That makes sense. Even though he's under control. It's still his moves. You can tell it's his fighting style. So for me, I'll just like isolate one little moment. I like the quick volley of punches on page 5, very Wing Chun of him. Bang, 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 bang. So I like that rabbit punching. That's where Superman says this could topple over the Eiffel Tower. So all right. What about dumb or weird moves? Superman's?
It's not dumb, but it's weird. Rolling with an amped up Polaris radiation filled punch. How do you roll with radiation? How can you be filled with one radiation that'll explode with it? And how can you roll with that? That's dumb. That's just, it can't happen.
Never mind the nonsense with the fireworks show.
Well, it's all in there.
For me, it was hard to decide with the weirdest move. There's a lot of weird things going on.
So many.
But you thought it was cool. I will call it out as weird, even dumb. It's Talking Bird. Okay. I mean, if he can do this, what makes Hawkman unique, right? So I felt a little stretch credulity for me. What about Hawkman's dumb or weird moves?
Hawkman, no. Hawkman was mind controlled. He can't have dumb moves. He had one move and he punched out the evil guy. So that's not dumb. But you know what? That Frank Rales brushing creepily Hawkman's wings for no reason that we can think of, that was not just weird, that was creepy.
I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know. No explanation. He's just slowly brushing. And in my head, it's very slowly brushing. And there's a close-up on the hand. It's creepy. It's very creepy.
This is a weird moment. You're right. A weird Hawkman moment, but it's not his fault. Okay, if I have to choose something different, I'll say, well, you know, when he punches Frank Rails at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, we're told the Polaris energy has dissipated or will dissipate. Feels risky, but even without that, it's still risky because Hawkman can punch the Eiffel Tower down.
So yeah.
So if we go by the logic of this story, he has to pull a punch here. It seems dangerous. And Superman's like smiling at this, like, violence.
Yeah. Violence. It's weird because it would have been nice to have, you know, Hawkman kind of changed with that moment, right? He could have been powered up with Polaris energy and that could have stayed and just have that mind control thing go away. But yeah, you know, they went another way.
Usually team ups like this aren't the place where you get like a big life-changing moment, not for a character who may or may not have his own series, which he doesn't at this point. Friendly farewell, team-up tradition. They leave arm-in-arm with the contest winner. What do you think of this moment?
I really liked it. I really liked it because I liked, you know, Mark Teichman. I thought he was important to, crucial to this story. He was my favorite part of the story, from the winning aspect to, you know, going on a photo shoot and finding out stuff that really helped Superman. I mean, I really like Mark Teichman, and I think them just flying off into the sunset together, smiling with the Blue Jay, that panel should have been bigger. And really have like Hawkman's wings really extended and, you know, seeing them closer. That's what I thought.
Good point. The previous panel says, Hawkman says this was a three-way team up. So you know, I think it makes sense to say goodbye to Mark as well.
Yeah.
And finally, our last question is, we ask if this were your, it wasn't, but if it were your first Hawkman comic, does the team up book do its job? Does it make you want to read more Hawkman stories?
I think for the action, yes.
Because he's not himself. That's it is a problem.
Exactly. And Hawkman, actually, I thought he was cool just because he had wings and weapons and stuff. But all that aerial supremacy, you know, he's so good in the air, was really fun. And I think even if I did read more Hawkman. I did. I mean, I read the Rand Thanagorian War, and you know, it was fun. I think I would read some more Hawkman just to see how he is.
Well, let me recommend the Hawk World series from the 90s. There's like the mini series,
okay,
which is kind of a precursor, but the actual series itself, where they come to Earth and they're space cops, I think might be more to your tastes because it's he uses laser guns, not just maces or whatever. So there's a range weapon element. It's very much about them learning how cops do it on Earth.
Okay.
There's like an exchange program. So all of that element is well done. It's John Ostrander writing. So, you know, it's good. So anyway, that's for your reading list. We'll take a break for a couple of promos and then we'll be back with our special features. Siskoid's blog of geekery is Doctor Who,
Babylon 5,
animation,
comics,
toys,
Godzilla,
Star Trek,
cats,
crypto,
role-playing games,
battle shovel,
X-Files,
music,
podcast,
board games,
Jack Kirby,
alien,
movie,
kung fu,
dinosaur,
and so much more. Siskoid's blog of geekery, still going strong at siskoid.blogspot.com.
Coming soon from Amalgam Comics. Thanashiar, also known as X-World, is a planet of adventure. Hawk Angel has returned home and assembled a new team of mutants to mirror the one he just left in the now classic JL Avengers number 100. Biff, the shape-shifting rogue. Nightmane, the high-perching gargoyle. The super-strong colossal manhawk. Chira Gray, the blazing phoenix. Heroes who will get to the heart of the Rannian shadow invasion. On the stands this week, only from Amalgam Comics.
All right, we're back. And we start with our monthly feature, the bonus team up, in which each of us proposes, in this case, a perfect Hawkman team up. What do you have?
I'm going to put Sirius Hawkman with Harvey Birdman, the Adult Swim Hanna-Barbera Hawkman equivalent. I don't know if you remember who Harvey Birdman, or just Birdman, when we were young, but Harvey Birdman in this team up. It's an alternate universe where Carter Hall, or Hawkman, has been arrested for being in a domestic dispute with Hot Girl in public, of course, and he's defended by the less than capable Harvey Birdman in court, because Harvey Birdman is an attorney. And it would be a fun bird people themed team up, you know, and it all resolves itself with bird puns and weird bird behaviors, you know, the daytime, nighttime, daytime, that kind of stuff. You know, birds are weird. It would show a lighter side of superheroes. Everybody's always picking on Aquaman for talking to fish and you know, being friends with fish. Well, I think Hawkman could take a little bit of that lightness and ridicule too.
For me, I was inspired by the events of the issue to propose Hawkman and Blue Jay. Huh? He's the hero of Angor, who eventually joined Justice League Europe. Because Blue Jay shrinks to doll size, I think that would be a fun throwback or tribute to the Hawkman-Adam friendship.
Oh, yeah.
Call it a crisis between Earths, since Angor is another dimension, really. And there you go. It markets itself.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
Next thing we do is Whatever Happened To. And that's something we only do for DC Comics Presents. This time around, we ask, Whatever Happened To Frank Rails? I didn't want to use Mark Teichman. That's, you know, he's a real person. Probably doesn't deserve our comedy stylings.
I'm almost sure of that.
Yeah. So Frank Rails, though, never appears again. So that's wide open. What happens to this villain of the month?
Well, after he was punched out by Hawkman, he was sent to Bel-Rev, a prison for supervillains. But Frank has a distorted vision of himself and his capabilities. He continued to plot and build a master plan to take down Hawkman, his arch nemesis. Of course, Hawkman has no idea who he is. For years, he's worked on this overly complicated plan. When he was released from Bel-Rev, because he got out on good behavior, he started putting his plan in action, and he became Dr. Intelligence. That's his new self-proclaimed super villain name.
Hardly better than Frank Rails.
Hardly better. Turns out that Dr. Intelligence was a prime example of being so incompetent, yet supremely confident that he never could take down Hawkman, but always believed that he would and could do so. What he lacked in capabilities and self-examination, he made up for sheer overconfidence and boasting. It's a four-part miniseries in the works right now from incredible writer Grant Morrison.
Can't believe Grant Morrison is writing this.
Can't you?
You know, he tried to blow up the French president, so that he's got to be in jail for a while, I would say. And now he wants revenge on Hawkman once more, except Hawkman is a different person these days. Or is he? So Rails does his research and finds a way to use the starscope to screw with Carter Hall's horoscope. It's not any stupider than the science in this issue. So as to screw up all of Hawkman's lives, the starscope changes his star sign to whichever has the worst outcome every day. So eventually he has to be stopped by a bunch of Hawkmen from across space and time, accidentally turning the starscope on himself and erasing his star sign entirely. And then nothing ever happens to him ever again. It's a Twilight Zone conclusion.
I heard the little song there.
Okay, now it's time for listener feedback from our previous episode Together, in which we covered DC Comics Presents number 10, starring Superman and Sergeant Rock. Let's start with Jeff R. Says, the Swamp Thing, Sergeant Rock crossover in Rick Veitch's time travel arc follows the plot of this issue so closely, it's probably a deliberate homage. I gotta check that out. I haven't read those issues since they came out. I wonder how close they actually come.
Chris Franklin says, Superman getting amnesia from explosions goes back to the classic Season 2 Adventures of Superman episode Panic in the Sky, which was also used in a comic story around the time. And, of course, inspired endless homages, either in subject or story title. Explosion sending him through time is the hook of Time and Time Again, one of the better multi-part arcs during the 90s triangle era of the Superman comics. That was kind of confusing, that triangle era.
It just followed the triangles.
Yeah, that's true. he gets sent back to World War II when. Bass will be happy to know that Jon Stewart did team up with Sergeant Rock and Easy Company in the three-part season finale to Justice League Season 1, The Savage Time. It doesn't quite shake out like my story or his story, but it's nonetheless entertaining, and John's military background comes into play. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either, but yeah, I'm sure. Gene Hendricks asks, can you believe that the Haunted Tank would come up against tanks in every strip? It's almost like real tanks in World War II would constantly battle other tanks. Yes, Gene. Of course, I can believe it. What I was saying, which what is less believable and nevertheless true, is that the strip Haunted Tank didn't tire itself out for me. Like, I read, like, the Showcase Presents, like, back to back, not one a month. Like, just, like, read right through it. And even though it's just tanks fighting tanks, you know, Robert Kanigher always found a twist, a hook, a way to make it interesting, and the art was always good, so that's my surprise. I'm not surprised that tanks fought tanks, or that planes fought planes, or boats fought boats, obviously. Well, but when you're so limited in the scope of like a war strip, what can you do, right, that's going to make it interesting every time? And somehow Robert Kanigher not only did it for Haunted Tank, he did it for, you know, Captain Storm, PT Boat Captain, and he did it for so many wartime type strips that I think it's pretty amazing.
I mean, it is incredible that, you know, this one thing has enough variety. Tanks fighting tanks has enough variety to keep you interested. But that was another example of sarcasm, what you did there, Siskoid, sarcasm, fighting sarcasm. Oh, I couldn't believe it. Jason Keane says, a very interesting comic that I never would have read without your coverage. I've never been a war comic fan. My favorite part of the episode was the discussion about how silly Superman's time travel power was and how accurate the depiction of Superman not being willing to kill even Nazis during wartime. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. We will.
Paul Keane says, fun episode. I always thought this was a cool story, despite the crazy selective amnesia. I agree with Bass that it was funny Superman was called Tagalong, given who he was. Superman's refusal to kill totally fit, and overall, this was a satisfying story, despite the crazy setup. Note, the issues you've covered, and a few more, are all in the recent DC Finest Team-Ups volume, which was a great read. It was great to listen to this after just having recently read the story again for the first time in a long time.
We're doing good work here. Tim Price says, I do think of amnesia and time travel as big tropes for Silver Age Superman, but they didn't bother me for this story because I will gladly take it as an excuse for a bonkers team up. And it was kind of nuts, but fun. I can tell I wouldn't really get into Sergeant Rock comics for an extended period, but team ups is a fine way to get a taste that I'll enjoy. Team-ups doing their job. Yes, they are.
And Scott Arthur asks if we're still taking suggestions for songs to accompany reading the comics. Scott, we only do that with the Ryan Daly episodes for Marvel 2-in-1. So each of the four guest hosts, each of the four team-up books, each have like a little thing that only they do to keep them like separate and distinctive. For me and Bess, it's Whatever Happened To.
Yep.
In other shows, it's a different thing. And that's because Ryan Daly is really good with music. And also, Bass and I have a strange music background.
Yeah. We listen to French stuff.
We're French Canadians. So there's a lot of Canadian music, first of all, in our, you know, in our rotation, just on radio. It would be like a high percentage of Canadian content. And that means that we eliminate a lot of American music. There's a lot of R&B on the charts in the US that we never got, I don't think. And then we also listen, like, maybe half the time we're listening to French language music, either from France or here in French Canada. So our selections would be things that people you know, don't know anything about, or that if you're not a French speaker, you wouldn't even understand what, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Our minds would go to those places. But you, Scott, if you want to suggest songs that go with the issue that we just read, you know, leave them in the comments. I'm sure we'll listen. So that could be an interesting thing for listeners to do. But we're not going to actually do it on the show ourselves for those reasons. All right. Well, thanks for teaming up with me, Bas. Let me reveal that the next time we speak, we'll be covering DC Comics Presents number 12, Superman and Mr. Miracle.
Ooh, that's cool. I always liked them.
The best new god?
The funnest new god.
Sure. A reminder that we do have a Patreon. So if you like this content and want more like it, think about leaving a monthly or a one-time donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Check it out at patreon.com/FW Podcasts. This month, we're proud to team up with our sponsor, Alan W. Wright, the Bold Outlaw. We also enjoy reading your thoughts, and the best place for that is fireandwaterpodcast.com. We'll read your comments on this issue when Bass is back with us, but next month, the cycle begins anew. And I'll be here with Shag as we continue his coverage of Marvel Team Up with issue 150. Yes, it's the last issue of that series, but not the last episode we'll do together. On that, see you next time for another amazing superhero team-up, because after all, justice
is a team effort.